Break Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump says he's looking forward to a proposed meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Hopefully that meeting will be a great success, and we're looking forward to it. It would be a tremendous thing for North Korea and a tremendous thing for the world. So we will be doing everything possible to make it a worldwide success.
The president, however, said he's prepared to walk away from the meeting if success appears out of reach. The president vowed not to repeat the mistakes of past administrations, insisting his maximum pressure campaign will continue until the North denuclearizes. In a tweet, Mr. Trump acknowledged publicly the visit of the Director of Central Intelligence, Mike Pompeo, to Pyongyang to meet Mr. Kim went well. He said the meeting was smooth and a good relationship was formed. Speaking alongside visiting Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, the president said the issue of Japanese abducted by North Korea will be on his agenda.
We want to see these families reunited as soon as possible. And I know for a fact that it's one of the truly most important things on Shinzo's mind.
While praising Japan as a close ally, Mr. Trump also insisted the bilateral trade imbalance must be addressed.
And removing barriers to U.S. exports. The United States is committed to free, fair, and reciprocal, very important word, trade.
Mr. Abe said he prefers multilateral trade arrangements like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. A court in Wichita, Kansas, Wednesday found three men guilty of plotting a 2016 bombing attack on an apartment complex that is home to Somali immigrants and their mosque in a case of domestic terrorism. They're described as belonging to a militia group. They face sentencing in late June. This is VOA News. A U.N. security team was fired on while preparing the way for inspectors from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons to launch an investigation into a suspected April 7 poison attack on the Syrian town Douma. The attack left more than 40 dead, prompting a U.S.-led retaliatory strike. The inspectors have been in Syria since last week. Western governments have voiced growing concern the evidence of any chemical attack is being lost. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis was asked about that Wednesday.
We're very much aware of the delay that the regime imposed on that delegation, but we are also very much aware of how they have operated in the past to conceal what they have done using chemical weapons. In other words, using the pause after a strike like that to try to clean up the evidence before the investigating team gets in. So it was unfortunate they were delayed.
Both Syria and Russia deny any toxic attack occurred, insist that neither is holding up inspectors from doing their work or tampering with the site of the attack. Britain has lashed out at Russia for suggesting that Britain was to blame for the poisoning of a former Russian double agent, Sergei Skripal, and his daughter last month. London determined that the nerve agent used was produced in Russia. Peter Wilson is the UK representative to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons.
This was a Novichok and a military-grade agent. Secondly, they made it very clear that this was highly purified. That means it's the kind of thing that can only be made in a very sophisticated laboratory.
Russia has denied any involvement in the March 4 attack. Skripal's condition continues to improve. He remains hospitalized. His daughter was released earlier this month. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called a snap presidential and general election for June 24 that will usher in a new, more powerful executive presidency, narrowly approved in a referendum last year. The ballot will take place under a state of emergency just renewed by Parliament Wednesday since a failed 2016 coup. In Armenia, thousands took to the streets again in the capital Yerevan Wednesday to protest the move of former President Serzh Sargsyan to the post of prime minister. The opposition sees it as a bid to hold on to power. Dozens were arrested in the protest march. Organizers said the demonstrations, first organized Friday, will engage in a national campaign of civil disobedience. Cuba's 86-year-old President Raul Castro is scheduled to step down Thursday after a decade in power, ending the Castro era that began with the 1959 revolution. The rubber-stamp National Assembly is expected to formally approve his replacement, 57-year-old Miguel Diaz-Canel, whose biggest challenge will be reviving the ailing economy on the communist-ruled island. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. SADC leaders are meeting today in Angola with focus on regional security, specifically the crisis in the DRC.
We'll see at the end of today if in reality SADC could take some real actions to find an agreement between President Kabila and the opposition parties.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai in Luanda. Burundi's opposition wants African Union intervention to stop next month's constitutional referendum. A South Sudan lawmaker and former journalist has expressed his support for a recent crackdown on local and international media houses. And a symbol of authority of the Nigerian Senate remains missing this morning after it was taken yesterday by thugs.
A suspended senator, Ovie Omo Adede, in a Rambo style, stormed the Senate of the Federal Republic of Nigeria in company of some unknown people and slashed the mace.
That's journalist Medina Dauda of VOA's Hausa service. Zimbabwe's president promises reforms as the country marked 38 years of independence yesterday. And delegates at a malaria summit urge a boost in funding for global anti-malaria programs. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, continue their meeting today in the Angolan capital, Luanda, with focus on regional security, specifically the crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Amnesty International has called on the SADC leaders to demonstrate their political will to address the human rights situation in the DRC. Meanwhile, ahead of the summit, SADC this week set up a liaison office in the DRC capital as part of the regional body's effort to support that country in achieving sustainable peace, security, and political stability. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai in the capital, Luanda, says President Joseph Kabila continues to entrench himself while the crisis in the DRC is affecting the entire Southern African region.
In reality, the real event is that SADC is opening a bureau of liaison to follow up the crisis in Democratic Republic of Congo. But we can see right now real political decisions. I must remember that in the last 24 hours, Amnesty International make a call for SADC to take action outside of political declarations. In reality, until now, we can see some kind of agreement between President Kabila and the opposition parties, and the crisis is worsening with a lot of political tensions and demonstrations in Kinshasa and other cities. The political crisis is worsening, which have negative effects in neighboring countries like Angola, with the increase of the number of refugees. So we'll see at the end of today if in reality SADC could take some real actions to find an agreement between President Kabila and the opposition party.
Mario, as you said, the key is that President Kabila should not seek re-election again. Do you think SADC has the political will to do that?
No, right now I don't see. President Kabila doesn't show any sign to leave the power. He's trying to delay the date of the general elections. He's trying to delay some kind of consensus and agreement with the opposition parties and the civil society. Even the charge, which has been trying to negotiate, has been suffering the repression from the regime. So it is a very difficult situation. We hope that the SADC countries themselves could find a more wider consensus to put more pressure on Kabila.
Mario, this is April, and the International Monetary Fund and World Bank annual meetings are taking place here in Washington. What about Angola? Is Angola seeking any loans from the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank?
Yes. The news is that finally, the Angola government requests a so-called non-financial assistance from the International Monetary Fund, according to a communique from the finance minister. So the target, it will be to help to implement economic reforms in Angola. And the agreement, known as Policy Coordination Instrument, and I quote, will help to improve the external credibility of Angola with positive impact on the ability to attract foreign direct investments, according to the finance minister's statement. The finance minister of Angola also added that this kind of agreement could help in implementing the macroeconomic stabilization plan, which is the effective economic policy of the new Angolan government, but did not say in detail what form this should take. But according to businessmen and specialists, the Angolan government has a few chances to run away for financial assistance from the IMF due to the economic crisis that the country is suffering and the difficulty to get loans from outside sources in the international market.
That was veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. Members of Burundi's opposition have called on the African Union and the East African Community to intervene and prevent the constitutional referendum scheduled for this year from taking place. As Moses Habiyarimana reports from Bujumbura, the referendum campaign is set to kick off next month.
The Burundian opposition members wrote a letter to the African Union and the East African Community to intervene and prevent their referendum to amend the 2005 constitution. Leon Ngendakumana is an opposition leader in Burundi. He says the African Union and the UN should use their mandate and influence to stop President Pierre Nkurunziza from amending the constitution and make him release political prisoners as well as disarm the ruling party youth wing known as Imbonerakure. The 2005 constitution allows the president to serve for not more than 2 terms, but according to the draft amendment, the presidential term will be changed from 5 to 7 years and the president can only serve not more than 2 consecutive terms. The president can also legally contest the presidential election after another president serves at least 1 term in the office. President Pierre Nkurunziza has described the upcoming referendum as normal. He says election and the referendum concern Burundians and that the region and the international community just have to follow and support as it has always been done in other countries. Pierre Claver Ndayicariye, the chairman of the Electoral Commission, said all is set to enable a free and fair process.
Nous aurons un vote aussi à l'étranger dans les ambassades et les consulats généraux.
He says there will be those voting in the embassies and consulates outside the country, and also Electoral Commission members will go with the Ministry of Defense to Somalia to make sure even Burundians serving the UN peacekeeping mission in Somalia can exercise their rights. Different interpretations of Burundi's 2005 constitution are at the center stage of the political crisis that has been ongoing since 2015, resulting to more than 1,000 people losing their lives. Among the articles that will be amended in the constitution is Article 96, which limits a president to run for more than 2 terms.
That was reporter Moses Habiyarimana in the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. The maize, symbol of authority of the Nigerian Senate, remains missing this morning after it was taken yesterday from the Senate chamber by thugs who invaded the Senate, led by a disgruntled senator. Senator Ove Omo Agege had been suspended by the Senate for his opposition to an electoral reform bill. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Senate cannot pass laws without the maize, which symbolizes the Senate's authority. On the line from the Nigerian capital, Abuja, is journalist Medina Dauda of VOA's Hausa service. Good morning, Medina, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, James.
We are so happy to have you, Medina. What happened on Wednesday in the Nigerian Senate?
On Wednesday morning around 11:30 a.m. Nigerian time, when the Nigerian Senate was in plenary, a suspended senator from Delta State of Nigeria, Senator Ovie Omo Adede, in a Rambo style, stormed the Senate of the Federal Republic of Nigeria in company of some unknown people and slashed the maize. Even when the security agents in the Senate resisted fiercely, there was a lot of fight, a lot of fisticuffs, a lot of flinging of chairs, but the people succeeded in getting away with the mess.
Medina, tell me, where was the Nigerian security? Is there a security around the Senate building?
The entire National Assembly of Nigeria is a place that is very, very, very secure because of the number of security operatives that are around the entire complex. You cannot just come as a stranger and gain access into the Nigeria Senate or the National Assembly complex. It was surprising to everyone around that complex Wednesday morning when these people came in company of this senator and invaded the entire National Assembly complex.
Medina, even you said this Senator Agege had been suspended. Could you tell us why he was suspended?
Ovie Omo Agege was suspended because he is one out of very many senators who opposed the amended Electoral Act. The Senate and the House of Reps have unifiedly confirmed that act. They accepted it, they passed it, House of Reps and Senate. And Senator Ovie Omo Agege is one senator, other many senators, who oppose that singular act. Because he opposed it, many of them who opposed it are being looked upon by the Senate itself as traitors.
You said that the Senate miss was taken by the intruders. The understanding is that the Senate business cannot take place without the presence of the miss. So what happens now? Has it been recovered?
That miss that was taken away has not been recovered as at this time you and I are talking. The spare miss was the one that was ordered for by the presiding Deputy Senate President, Senator Ike Ekweremadu. So the plenary continued with the spare miss.
Medina Dauda, so nice to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, James Batty. My pleasure.
That's journalist Medina Dauda of US Hausa Service speaking with us from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 19th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 18 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa has promised reforms to attract foreign investment as the country marked 38 years of independence from Britain yesterday. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
Nothing is impossible, my countrymen and women. Zimbabwe shall rise and be great again. Happy 38th birthday, Zimbabwe. Long live!
That was Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa ending his almost hour-long independence speech Wednesday. Mnangagwa took office in November after the country's longtime leader and liberation hero, Robert Mugabe, resigned under military pressure. The failed economy is a top priority, and Mnangagwa, who spent decades by Mugabe's side, has been quick to distance himself from the economic policies of his former boss. In his speech Wednesday, the president promised reforms to help lure back foreign investors.
Once again, we are free to dream, to hope, and to believe. This new spirit has spread outside our borders, and we are hugely encouraged by the goodwill our country continues to receive from around the world. This renewed domestic and foreign investor confidence has seen our projected economic growth increase from 3.7% last year to 4.5% in 2018.
Mnangagwa did not mention his predecessor, nor did he talk about some 16,000 striking nurses his deputy, Constantino Chiwenga, fired late Tuesday after they refused to return to work. Zimbabwe is headed for a key test with nationwide elections later this year. In another reversal of Mugabe-era policy, Mnangagwa has invited Western election observers to monitor the process. The president called Wednesday for political dialogue to resolve disputes. Mnangagwa's top rival for the presidency, acting opposition leader Nelson Chamisa, was in the audience and had this to say.
The speech was not for us an indication of what we are, the direction we are taking. He said that they are free and fair election conditions. We actually differ respectfully, and we are going to engage him on that.
The government has not set the date for the poll, which must be held by August 22. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A South Sudanese lawmaker and former veteran journalist has expressed his support for the recent crackdown on local and international media houses in the country. Alfred Taban says any media house that does not follow South Sudan's regulations should be shut down.
Things have improved, but only that, you know, there are administrative problems that have cropped up. When you talk about this closure of the BBC's broadcast, which was announced yesterday, the Media Sudan Broadcasting Corporation and the Media Authority, the BBC has not been paying its rent here in Juba. And I think usually this is the case. If you don't pay your rent, you are cut off. You have to pay your rent, and things go ahead. But if you don't want to pay your rent, then I think that is also going too far.
The UN-sponsored Radio Miraya, we understand that their frequency was suspended. And right now in Juba, if you tune on to Miraya, you hear a different signal. The signal of Miraya is being jammed. Is that also having something to do with the payment of rent?
I don't know about the jamming, but I know Miraya was saying they are a UN agency and they don't need to register. But the media authority said no, they have to register. I think they resolved that, and I think Miraya resumed. Jamming, I'm not hearing of any jamming, I don't know. This morning I listened to Radio Miraya, and it was out very clear. I could follow it very clearly. So I don't know about this jamming you're talking about.
And as a lawmaker, you're aware of the SOFA agreement, the Status of Forces Agreement, which Miraya signed with the government of South Sudan, and it clearly indicates in that agreement that the UN will operate its radio the way they want, and this agreement is being violated.
The media authority and Miraya Radio were able to resolve this case.
Let's talk a little bit about the media authority. I remember myself, you, Jacob Akol, and other journalists went to Rumbek to meet and see how the media in South Sudan can regulate itself. And that was why the idea of the media authority came up. But the media authority is now cracking down on the media. Is that their mandate?
The media authority was formed to regulate the media environment, but not to oppress. And I think they have been doing it relatively well, although with some difficulties here and there. These media houses have so much been used to not being touched. I mean, if you don't register your media house and you want to operate, where does it happen that you can do that?
I hate to get to personal questions, but I have to ask this for the sake of the listeners. You have been a champion of freedom of speech.
Yes.
For quite a long time. You have been advocating for freedom of speech in South Sudan. Now that you are a lawmaker, the tone has changed.
Yes, indeed. My fight, my struggle for freedom of expression remains. I still am a strong proponent of freedom of expression. But freedom of expression also does not mean lawlessness. It does not mean people disregarding regulations of a country. That regulation and not pay rent, and you are punished for that, I don't think you will come to me for defense. I will not defend you.
That was Alfred Taban, a member of South Sudan's parliament. He was speaking with reporter John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program. After 16 years of steady decline, malaria cases are on the rise again globally, and experts warn that unless efforts to tackle the disease are stepped up, the gains could be lost. Henry Richwell reports from a summit held on Wednesday in London, where delegates urged a boost in funding for global anti-malaria programs.
Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates has invested billions of dollars into tackling malaria. it has paid off. Deaths from the disease fell by more than 60% between 2000 and 2015, meaning 7 million lives were saved. In 2016, however, that trend was reversed. There were more than 216 million reported cases in 91 countries, an increase of 5 million from the previous year.
The co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Mr. Bill Gates.
On the sidelines of this week's London Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, Gates told delegates, including several African leaders, the fight against malaria must be stepped up.
If we don't keep innovating, we will go backwards. If we don't maintain the commitments that we're making here today, malaria would go back up and kill over a million children a year, because the drugs and the insecticides always are evaded by the mosquito and the parasite.
Malaria is estimated to cost the African economy more than $12 billion per year and consumes up to 40% of national healthcare budgets on the continent. Children and pregnant women are most severely affected. The increase in cases is caused by a number of factors, Professor Alistair Craig of the University of Liverpool's School of Tropical Medicine said via Skype.
We're seeing quite dramatic increases in the resistance to the insecticides that we use to control the insect vector populations, and that has been really the mainstay of the gains and very remarkable gains that we've seen over the last few years. And we're just beginning to see that the parasites are starting to develop resistance to the drugs that we use to treat them.
Craig adds the fight against malaria will likely become harder.
And we've gained what might be called the easier gains, and now we've got the harder ones to do, and they take even greater implementation and newer tools to allow us to look at where transmission is taking place.
Such new tools cost money, but funding has plateaued. At the Commonwealth Conference, Britain pledged more than $2 billion to fight the disease, while Bill Gates put forward another $1 billion and urged the international community to do more. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Leaders of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, continue their meeting today in the Angolan capital, Luanda, with focus on regional security, specifically the crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Amnesty International has called on the SADC leaders to demonstrate the political will to address the human rights situation in the DRC. The mace, symbol of authority of the Nigerian Senate, remains missing this morning after it was taken yesterday from the Senate chamber by thugs who invaded the Senate, led by a disgruntled senator. Senator Ove Omo Agege had been suspended by the Senate for his opposition to an electoral reform bill. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Senate cannot pass laws without the mace, which symbolizes the Senate's authority. And that's it for this Thursday, April 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, join us for a special broadcast on autism, hosted by VOA health correspondent Lenore Madu. She will host a panel of experts to demystify the developmental disorder.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.